Your liberal aunt is upset that Donald Trump said the word bloodbath in a rally in Ohio on Saturday. But what did he really say? What did he really mean? We are going to break down the media lies on this. Also, what if God worships us? That is the question that a preacher is asking from a pulpit in Washington. Oh my goodness, we got a lot to say about that. But first, at the top of the show, I'm going to give you some relationship advice. So buckle up for a jam-packed episode of Relatable. Hey guys, welcome to Relatable. Happy Thursday. Hope everyone has had a wonderful week so far. Wow, your reception of yesterday's episode has been absolutely incredible. I mean, it seems like you guys feel like I felt when I was sitting here doing this interview, that this is one of the best conversations that I've had. And I've seen you say that several times, or a lot of you have said that this was one of your favorite episodes ever. And that's really saying something considering I have almost 1,000 episodes of Relatable, which, by the way, that is coming up. I don't know what number this is. 971? It's 972. Oh my goodness. Okay, so how should we celebrate? You guys can write us in, you know, on YouTube, on the YouTube comments, Instagram DMs. You can make your suggestion to us. Maybe we'll put up a question box on the Relatable with ABS Instagram account and we'll get some ideas. But how should we celebrate? How should we honor you guys? Because you're the reason that I've been here for almost 1,000 episodes, all the way back in 2018 when I was recording from home and I was doing all the editing and everything myself. It's crazy how much it's grown and I'm just so thankful for it. Won't get into all that right now. We'll do that on the 1,000th episode, but send us your ideas for that. But anyway, yesterday was an amazing episode out of all of the conversations that I've had. She was just so brilliant. Gosh, if you haven't listened to that, go listen to it. Share it everywhere. So much good information. I really cannot wait to read her book myself and for y'all to read it too. I really feel like it could make a difference. All right, a couple things before we get into the topics that we will discuss today. One, another show-related, episode-related announcement. We are going to be covering the Nickelodeon documentary sometime next week. I say this because a lot of you have been messaging me about it, asking me to comment on it, to cover it. But just as we've done with other assessments of different series like the Happy Shiny People documentary, so-called documentary about the Duggars, we really have to sit down and we have to watch it and we have to write notes and we have to pull clips. And so it takes a long time because we want to give it a full and fair assessment and make sure that everything is in context before we deliver it to you. And so we will be talking about that. That's our homework over the weekend, to watch that and to give our comments sometime next week. So we will be talking about that, I would say probably on Tuesday. So you can just look forward to that. Also, just a reminder that we've got some cute merch, alliemerch.com. We've got our You're Not Enough But Jesus's great conversation starter, crew necks, hats. That brown hat is a corduroy hat. It's really, really cute. And then our Comfort Colors t-shirts. We've got a lot of new merch coming down the pipeline that I am super excited about. Gosh, guys, we've actually got like a lot of announcements for the Relatable audience. Like a lot of announcements coming down the pipeline in just a few weeks. I'm so excited. It's going to be a great year. It's going to be a crazy year with the election, but it's going to be a great year for Relata gals and Relata bros. Okay, so I wanted to, this is kind of something that I'm deciding to do on the fly. Before we talk about the Trump bloodbath stuff, I wanted to talk about this tweet that I saw, and I posted on Instagram, I commented on it, and it seemed to resonate with a lot of you. And it has to do with relationships as an adult, romantic relationships, dating relationships, and when you know when to break up with someone, when a guy's lack of commitment actually means that you should no longer be together, or when there is a good reason for it. And what I've noticed is that you guys really enjoy when I talk about relationships, when I talk about breakups and all that stuff. And I don't consider myself an expert. I'm just someone who has experience in this arena, who, you know, I dated in high school and college, and then I met my husband, and I realized that what people had always told me is true, that when you know, you know. I thought that that was just crazy. I didn't understand it. And then I met my husband, and like immediately I was like, oh, this is what everyone means. You just click with them. So I've been in the relationship where I've been trying to convince myself that this person is the right person. I have been in the relationship where I feel like I am trying to convince the other person that this is right. And then I've been in the relationship, which I still am now after being married for almost 9 years, that there's no convincing. There was never any convincing. There was just, yes, this is absolutely the person who God has for me. And so I've been through the breakups. I've been through all the different stages of dating. I have lots of friends who have too. I've seen just the good, the bad, and the ugly of these romantic relationships. And I'm really passionate about talking about them because, well, they're very formative experiences in people's lives, especially the lives of women. And I think that we can do a better job of dating. We can do a better job of relationships. We can do a better job of breaking up and being honest. I have friends right now, beautiful, wonderful friends who would love to be married, who are single. And the dating scene out there is rough. You guys who are single, you know that it is rough. The dating apps are rough. Even when you're set up by mutuals, it can be rough. There's ghosting. There's awkwardness. There's cowardice. There's just so much. I've seen that meme go around several times. That's like those of us who have gotten married in the last 10 years feel like we got the last chopper out of NAMM. And we kind of do. We kind of do feel that way. But it's not hopeless. It's never hopeless, because if you are to be married, God has already selected the person that you are going to marry before you are even born. And he is good and he is sovereign. And by the way, you don't have to get married to fully glorify God. But I saw this tweet in relation to all of that, as I give you the context for all of it. I saw this tweet from a journalist in Italy, and it says, I have a friend who has been in a relationship for 5 years. She is 32 now. He is 35. He says that he loves her, but doesn't feel ready to move in or commit. Thoughts? Question mark. Now, I will say that I am not really in the business of telling people that I do not know to break up. If I don't know all the situations, unless it's like cut and dry. If someone's like, oh, he's abusing me, he's cheating on me, like, you know, all the, or he's, I'm a Christian, he's not a Christian. If you're dating or if you're engaged, then yeah, I would say break up. But there are a lot of different details and different nuances in people's relationships. There could be different caveats, different circumstances. And so I know all of that. But this person asked in general, what are your thoughts about this situation? And from the information that we have, someone who is 32 and 35, they've been dating for 5 years. She doesn't give any extenuating circumstances or reasons other than he doesn't feel ready to move in or commit. Based on that knowledge, I am saying goodbye. Goodbye. You break up with him and you move on. No, no, no. He is a man child at this point. There is a failure to launch. There is something going on here. And there is no innocuous good reason, no justification, no valid excuse for him to not commit. What is really going on here is that he does not want to. He doesn't want to. That's, at the end of the day, that's what it is. And we women, we've spent all of this time psychoanalyzing, thinking, oh, well, he does want to, he does love me, but we just, it's just because of this like thing in his past, or so, like that we give them all these different reasons and all these different justifications. And maybe that is true in your particular situation. It's usually not. It is usually that he simply does not want to, because the phrase is true. If he wanted to, he would. If he wanted to, he would. When a guy wants to, he will stop at nothing. He will stop at nothing to pursue you, to secure the relationship, to make sure that you are together forever. If he wanted to, treat you well, if he wanted to text you back, if he wanted to pursue you, if he wanted to propose, if he wanted to do all of these things, he would. Now, you might think that you're the exception. You probably are the exception. I'm talking about a general rule. If he wanted to, he would. At this point, I'm not saying within the first 2 weeks or even 6 months of a relationship, but you're in your 30s, you've been dating for 5 years, and he will not commit. It is because he doesn't want to. Now, a lot of people have also pointed out that why buy the cow if you're getting the milk for free? That is unfortunately true. At the same time, even though, of course, I believe saving sex for marriage, absolutely. At the same time, I don't want it to seem like sex is like a pawn in this game, and that's what you have to hold out to convince someone to like love you or be with you. Sure, that's part of it, but there's more here. He just doesn't actually love her enough to commit to her in this particular situation. So just remember that. And I'm talking about dating. I'm talking about being engaged. If he wanted to, he would. You don't need to overthink it. You don't need to psychoanalyze it. You don't need to give him a million different excuses. At this point in your life, as an adult who I know you as a woman, you are ready to get married. You don't need to be messing around because you are wasting. Listen to me. You're wasting your most fertile years on losers. Do not do that. Do not waste your most fertile years on weak men who will not commit. If he wanted to commit to you, he would. And what you're going to find is that once you break up and once you get over that difficulty, and it is difficult, and that sadness of being without him, that you will be better off. And that one day you will look back, whether you marry someone else quickly or not, you will still look back and say, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. I didn't see all those red flags then. I didn't see all the problems then. I didn't see why it wouldn't work then. But when I trusted you and I made the right decision, I now see with clarity that that was the wrong situation. Thank you for giving me the strength to do the right thing. That I can promise you. I cannot promise you that God has Prince Charming waiting around the corner. I can't promise you that you will ever be married or have kids. I want that for you if that is what God has for you. But I don't know. We don't have a promise of fulfilling our wants and desires and dreams in this life. But I can promise you that getting out of a relationship that is wasting your time and wasting your energy, dating a boy that needs to become a man, that is not right for you. And that you do need to get out of it. Never be in a relationship, dating, engaged, where you are convincing yourself that you like him, or you are convincing him that he likes you or loves you, whatever stage that you're in. There really should not be any convincing. Not saying it has to be perfect. I'm not saying it always has to be easy. But you should not, in the dating and engagement time, you should not have to convince yourself of anything. Like, that's the time of romance. That's the time of feelings. There won't always be those exact same feelings, but that's the time where you should feel that. And you should be so convinced. And there should be a time where you feel like, oh my gosh, I cannot be without this person. Wait for that. That's what I would say. And wait, of course, most of all, for the godly man. That's the most important thing. Wait for the godly man. Wait for the mature man who will pursue you and who will honor you and who does want a godly, biblical marriage and is willing to lead you in that. Wait for that person. Do not settle. I know you're scared. You're not going to find someone who is better than the guy that you're settling for. I know that you're scared that this is your last shot. I know that you're scared of being single. I know that you're scared of being alone. I know that you're sad because all of your friends are getting married and you're tired of being the bridesmaid and never the bride. Do not settle. It is better to be single and sad than married and stuck. Okay? Just remember that. Okay, that's my rant that I give, like, I don't know, maybe once a year. And it always seems to hit the right person. So just, you know, take what I say with a grain of salt. It's just my opinion, just my perspective. But this tweet that I saw on X just reminded me of that, of how important of a message I think that is. Okay, now let's get into some other things. Let me tell you about our first sponsor for the day. And that is, how do I decide? Okay, it's going to be Every Life. My first sponsor for the day is Every Life. And this is the only and the first pro-life diaper company. You would think that all diaper companies were pro-life because you would think that they would want more babies. That's kind of like their clientele. But unfortunately, a lot of these major diaper companies, even like the crunchy ones that have all the great ingredients, they are donating some of their profits to pro-abortion politicians and pro-abortion organizations. You don't want to worry about that when you're buying diapers. And so you can purchase your diapers from Every Life. They're high quality, they're great ingredients, and you're also supporting a company that supports life. They support all of their employees who are either adopting or having babies on their own. They are donating portions of their sales to pro-life organizations like Save the Storks, like Live Action. They're helping pregnancy centers. So you can just feel good all around with your purchase. I will say from personal experience, I think that if you were to make comparisons to other diapers, they probably run a little bit on the smaller side, which can be good just depending on like where you are in the sizing and where your baby is in growth. But that's just a little aside, just a little tip for you. Go to everylife.com, use code ALLY10, enjoy a 10% discount on your first order. Everylife.com, code ALLY10. Okay, let's talk about this bloodbath stuff. Okay, let's talk about this bloodbath stuff. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Donald Trump, he was in Vandalia, Ohio, a suburb of Dayton, a few days ago, and he was giving his speeches. You know how his speeches are. He's just kind of riffing. Some of the things are planned, but then he'll kind of go off on a tangent, and he was talking about what he would do in relationship with China and their manufacturing if he becomes president. He said that if he were elected, the Chinese cars that are being manufactured in Mexico and then imported here would be hit with 100% tariff because, of course, he believes that it is hurting the American car industry, which I would totally agree with. I love that. I love that plan. He said, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. OK, so let's play that one.
If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us. Now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it.
Okay, so it's obvious what he's saying, at least to me, that, okay, if I don't get elected and we're not able to put our policies in place, things are going to be really bad for the country. It's going to be a bloodbath in the sense that the country is really going to suffer. We're going to spiral into chaos even further. Things are going to be really bad. He's trying to make the case, which is what candidates do, that you need to elect me to save the country. You need to elect me to bring order to this chaos and to put my policies in place to make the changes that are going to save and protect the country. And it just sounded like to me, he was like, yeah, talking about manufacturing in China and Mexico, that's the least of our concerns. And he's kind of vaguely alluding to all of the other dangers at our door if Democrats are given 4 more years, which I agree with. NBC News asked the Trump campaign spokeswoman Caroline Leavitt for a comment about former president's bloodbath remark, to which she responded, "Biden's policies will create an economic bloodbath for the auto industry and auto workers." Okay, so that's even more specific than I would have interpreted. But either way, on the same page, we understand what he meant. Obviously, he meant metaphorically. Maybe he did mean literally, in the sense that we are seeing violence on the streets because of progressive policies. We are seeing an increase in violence and chaos because of the open border policy of the Biden administration. And so he probably is speaking literally, but he is not saying what the media is insisting that he's saying. The media, as I will detail in just a second, the media is saying that he is threatening a bloodbath. The media is asserting that President Trump meant that if you don't elect me, all of my followers are going to like wage some kind of civil war and shed blood in the streets. Just absolutely ridiculous. So here's the here's Biden-Harris headquarters. This is the official War Room social media account for the Biden-Harris reelection. They issued a full statement. It said, "Tonight, Donald Trump said there would be a bloodbath if he wasn't elected, and that if he lost, there would be no more elections." And he says, "It's why last night Trump's own former vice president, Mike Pence, who Trump's supporters called to hang for not overturning the election, came out against Trump." And so they're trying to make this case here that he is threatening the country, that they go on to say that he's threatening political violence, that he is doubling down on his threats of violent retribution if he does not win. But that's clearly, again, not what he's saying. He's not threatening anything. He is saying it's going to be bad for the country. He is arguing that it's basically going to be the end of any kind of representative democracy in the United States if Biden wins again, which we can talk about as we get closer to the election. I happen to think that's true. I happen to think that's true, that elections, free and fair elections, which are already very vulnerable in the United States, to put it politely, I do think that those are going to be a thing of the past in the near future. And I'm not just talking about in some places, but everywhere. And so they're trying to make it seem like he is threatening that he is going to take away elections and that he is going to shed blood, which, of course, that is not what's going on. And now all of these media outlets are running with this. They're shortening the clip where he just says, "If I don't win, it's going to be a bloodbath." NBC News: Trump says there will be a bloodbath if he loses the election. The New York Times: Trump says some migrants are not people and predicts a bloodbath if he loses. Okay, the migrant thing, of course, is like a separate issue. Of course, all immigrants are people. Of course, they're all made in the image of God. But like, am I worried about Trump saying that some immigrants who are coming over here and raping and murdering, like the illegal who murdered Lake and Riley, am I really worried that President Trump is referring to a guy like that as not a person? No, I'm not. I'm much more concerned about the crimes being committed, the preventable crimes being committed, than what President Trump or President Biden is calling these people. But of course, it is more egregious, according to the New York Times, to say something mean to an immigrant than for an immigrant to commit a violent murder. CBS, an illegal immigrant, to be specific. CBS News: an Ohio campaign rally, Trump says there will be a bloodbath if he loses November election. Politico: Trump says country faces bloodbath if Biden wins in November. NPR: Trump says some migrants are not people and warns of bloodbath if he loses. Rolling Stone: Trump says there will be a bloodbath and elections will end if he isn't reelected. LA Times: if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath. Trump campaign downplays remarks. The Hill: Trump says some undocumented immigrants are not people, warns U.S. will see bloodbath if not reelected. CNN, who surprisingly provided some context: Trump warns a bloodbath for auto industry, okay, and country if he loses the election. And so they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. Journalists like this are not stupid. They are probably, in some ways, just to be honest, like, they're probably not the brightest bulbs. But in this regard, they know what they're doing. It's actually actively manipulative and malicious. They know exactly what they're doing. They know that they're taking him out of the context. They know that they're lying. They know that this is libel, and they don't care because there are no consequences. And the ends justify the means. If they can whip up enough outrage, enough hate, enough fear, if they can push this narrative that to save democracy, you have to vote Democrat, that to be sophisticated and learned and compassionate and empathetic, you have to vote Democrat, then it's all justified. And they see it as contributing to the greater good, even if it's a lie. And that is really why progressives win, because there's not any sense of honor or honesty. There's no moral standard by which they are abiding. As I've said before, it's much easier to win and to dominate if you're on the progressive side versus the conservative side, because the progressive side is just trying to destroy. They're just trying to dismantle. They're just trying to destruct. They're just trying to take everything down. Western civilization, America, the Constitution, the heteronormative patriarchy, whatever. They're just trying to tear down. And you really don't have to agree on that much if you're just trying to tear down. You can all take your tool and you can just whack at the foundation, whack at the walls, and it really doesn't matter what method you use. It really doesn't matter if you all agree on anything, as long as you are all equally bent on destroying what is, destroying what's good and right and true, then you don't really have to form like a cohesive coalition. That's why it works. On the right, we're trying to figure out what we're building, and we're trying to decide what we want America to look like. We're actually trying to build a future that is better. And so to do that, you have to decide on the foundation. You have to decide on what tools you want to use. You have to decide on the right materials. You can't really all have different ideas and come together and expect to build a sturdy house if you don't even agree on the foundation that you are building on. That's the problem that we have on the right. I mean, it's a good problem in one sense that I think it's the more moral side to be on. It's a better conversation to have. But at the end of the day, as we are quarreling over like what foundation to use, what materials to use, the left is just destroying the house. And so that's why they lie, because it's just about destruction. It's just about winning. It's just about power. And they will gaslight you to the end and telling you that it's the right that wants power. It's Trump that's a fascist. It's conservative Christians who are the Christo-fascist Christian nationalists that just want power and to control women's bodies and are white nationalists, yada, yada, yada. Meanwhile, they will do anything possible to gain power, including lie, cheat, and steal. They have no moral limits. Their moral limit is just power. It's really like the limit does not exist, to quote Mean Girls. They really just want as much authority, as much power as possible. And that is part of also why they are allowing so many people in. Demographics, it's destiny. And so they know that they can change the electorate to win elections forevermore. That's what's going on here. But they've got to continue to lie about Donald Trump and lie about Republicans so that they can secure a one-party state. There's a lot of hypocrisy when it comes to this because, of course, many other politicians on both sides of the aisle have used this metaphorical language, bloodbath. And have they received the same criticism? Of course not. Now, some people say, oh, we don't need to point out hypocrisy. Pointing out hypocrisy doesn't do anything. Saying that the other side gets different treatment, that doesn't do anything. Okay, people who say that are perpetually online. And that might be true on X.com, that we've moved past, those of us who are online and plugged in, we've moved past needing to just say there's hypocrisy. We know there's hypocrisy. But for the normies, for the mainstream, for the people who aren't plugged in every day, they actually still are convinced by, oh, you see that Trump said this. You think it's so egregious. You think it's so awful because the media is telling you this. Well, look at this person who said this over here and how they did not get the same reaction. That still has the ability to wake people up and open eyes. That's why I need to point out this hypocrisy. So, The Guardian, March 7th, 2020, Biden warns against primary bloodbath as Sanders sharpens attacks ahead of key contests. Speaking at a political fundraiser held at a private residence in Bethesda, Maryland, Biden said, What we can't let happen is let this primary become a negative bloodbath. And then he goes on to saying, oh, we can't reelect Trump. So, of course, he and many others have used this language in the past. Joe Walsh, he is a commentator who has been very anti-Trump for a while, but he used to be, I don't know, I think I would describe him as like a far right activist commentator. You know, he spoke out recently against Donald Trump using this word bloodbath, and people went into his Twitter history and found that he had used that term quite often in his political commentating career. But that's the hypocrisy that we're really dealing with right now. According to Colin Rugg, MSNBC and Politico used the word bloodbath to describe the ongoing situation at the RNC. You'll see MSNBC, bloodbath, MAGA allies slash RNC staff as Trump team takes over. Politico, bloodbath at RNC, Trump team slashes staff at committee. So we understand that this is used metaphorically. And so at the same time, these same outlets like NBC and like Politico are saying, oh my goodness, I cannot believe that he is using the word bloodbath. Joe Biden said, it's clear this guy wants another January 6th. Evil. But the American people are going to give him another resounding electoral defeat this November. Nancy Pelosi also commented on this.
He's even predicting a bloodbath. What does that mean? He's going to exact a bloodbath? There's something wrong here. How respectful I am of the American people and their goodness. But how much more do they have to see from him to understand that this isn't what our country is about? Praising Hitler.
Really, lady? Really? No, our great country is about, according to Nancy Pelosi, the slaughter of unborn children. That's what it's about. And mutilating the genitals of minors who say that they are the opposite sex. That's what our great country is about. I think I saw a Babylon Bee headline that said Democrats clarify that they're okay with a bloodbath if it's just from killing the unborn. Yeah, like, let's talk about a literal bloodbath, not even metaphorical, as Trump is talking about. Let's talk about a literal bloodbath. Abortion, the bloodbath that has occurred from all of the preventable murders committed by illegal aliens. The bloodbath in Democrat-run cities because progressive prosecutors and progressive judges refuse to enforce the law and keep criminals in prison in the name of social justice and racial equity. The bloodbath that's happening because young people are being butchered by profit-driven surgeons in the name of gender affirmation. Like, Democrats are actually literally the party of the bloodbath. They are the bloodthirsty party. Literally, actually, quantifiably, tangibly, provably, not metaphorically. So I don't want to hear it that, oh, Trump just shouldn't have said that. I don't even want to hear like the nuanced take from, you know, some sophisticated people on the right. Well, you know, Democrats are bad, but Trump, he really shouldn't have said that. Look, I know Trump shouldn't say a lot of things that he says. This is not a problem. He's speaking metaphorically. Everyone knows that. I don't want to hear from the party of abortion how mean and scary it is that Trump said the word bloodbath. Everyone knew what he means. These people are just evil. Joe Scarborough of MSNBC, Donald Trump's America, and he is proud of it. Promised another bloodbath if he loses again. This is a video of January 6th. Can I point out that the only person who died at January 6th was a woman named Ashley Babbitt, who was shot by a police officer, an unarmed woman who was shot by a police officer. So again, they're saying January 6th was the bloodbath. I'm certainly not justifying any of the violence that happened there or any of the breaking of the law that happened there, but that wasn't even an actual bloodbath. So when they say another January 6th, what are they even talking about? So this is what we have to look forward to over the next several months. there will be lie after lie after lie. There will be lie after lie after lie about Donald Trump, about Republicans, and it is your responsibility to ensure that you are digging into these headlines, that you are watching the videos for yourself. Of course, that's part of my job. I will do that for you and clarify things and bring you the truth whenever I possibly can, but we've got to be so discerning when it comes to what the media tells us. If something sounds too good or bad to be true, really when it comes to either side, that should sound an alarm in our minds that we really need to dig in. Okay, I've got more to say about that. Let me pause. Let me tell you about our next sponsor for the day. And that is Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider for 10 years. They've been big supporters of this show. I'm so thankful. So if you are looking for another company to switch to that actually aligns with your values, then you should switch to Patriot Mobile. You have the ability to access all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage that you've been accustomed to without funding the left. So when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you are sending the message that you want to support the sanctity of life, the Second Amendment, our military veterans, first responders. Patriot Mobile has a 100% U.S.-based customer service team. They make switching really, really easy. Plus, you can get free activation when you make the switch if you use my code Allie. Go to patriotmobile.com/Allie. Use code Allie at checkout. That's patriotmobile.com/Allie. Okay, so Trump is hitting back at Biden and the Democrats with a new ad about Biden's border bloodbath. I think that this is a great, great move on his part rather than apologizing, which you never should to these people because they're not good faith people. He is using this moment to his benefit. So here's thought three.
Church teacher accused of abusing several children in Montgomery County, Maryland. Tonight, immigration officials tell us he was never supposed to be in the United States in the first place, and he had already been deported twice.
Palm Beach County deputies arrested three undocumented immigrants in Lake Worth Beach on sexual battery charges. According to the arrest affidavit, the three suspects, all from Guatemala, abducted a local woman along the street and threw her inside a truck.
So at the end there, if you're just listening, it says Biden's border bloodbath, which of course it is. And I'm not even just talking about the Americans who have been needlessly and preventably murdered, raped, assaulted by illegal aliens who should never have been here in the first place. I am also talking about the trafficking that this incentivizes. I am talking about the rape and sexual assault that this incentivizes at the border. I am talking about all of the chaos that has ensued in those border towns. There is nothing good, nothing good, nothing compassionate, nothing virtuous, nothing moral about illegal immigration. It only harms the most vulnerable. It only harms the most vulnerable. And Biden and his administration are doing everything they possibly can to make sure it is impossible to guard the border. They are taking down buoys. They are taking down razor wire. They are fighting all the way up to the Supreme Court to try to do that, to try to stymie any effort by the state of Texas to guard its own people and guard its own border. They are doing this purposely. You know, I just saw the Center for Immigration Studies. They released a statement. They are right now in the middle of a case figuring out what exactly Biden is doing and how he is getting these illegal aliens into the United States. It's not just the busing from the border. It's also that he is actually flying on the taxpayer dime these illegal aliens from different parts of South America and Mexico into 43 airports in the United States. And then from there, they can basically do what they want to do. This is purposeful. As we've talked about many times, demographics are destiny. And also, I mean, the more people that you have counted in the census in an area, the more political power you have, because how many representatives an area or a state has is based on its population, And so this is all part of the game. This is all part of their desire to amass lasting power and to change the country fundamentally, to make sure that the obstacle of the most conservative group among us, which happens to be white evangelicals, is far outnumbered, so that any political power or voting power that we have, that any conservative has, is completely outweighed by this new crop of people that don't share our values, that don't have the same beliefs that we do, don't have the same priorities as we do. I'm talking about these illegal aliens. It's all part of the plan. So this bloodbath stuff, Christian nationalist propaganda, all of that, it's a part of a great distraction to try to make you think that voting Democrat is saving democracy when really it is just the opposite. So got to be discerning. Now, I will say, because I do need to like bring up some criticism of Donald Trump in the same rally, I did just want to comment this. So like, I know that there's going to be some mad YouTube comments about me criticizing him at all, but I do have something to say about something said about Ron, or something Trump said about Ron DeSantis in this same rally. So this is sought for.
One of the people said, they said, are you going to run against the president? He said, I have no comment. To me, that meant he's running. So I hit him hard. I hit him low. I hit him high, just like we did to ISIS. We hit him hard. We hit him low. We hit him high. We hit him in the middle. We hit him from on top. And we even came under the ground. We hit this guy so hard. By the time he announced, nobody knew what the hell happened. They said, what happened to him? He's a shell of the man.
I don't know how this helps. How does this help? I mean, you need DeSantis supporters to vote for you to win. You know that, right? Like, you cannot afford to lose any vote if you are going to win. And if you're worried about election funny business, you want the victory to be so overwhelming and so resounding that there is no question who won, right? And so you're not going to get there by insulting the supporters that you need. There are some DeSantis supporters who are not willing to hold their nose and vote for Trump. And you can lambast them all you want to. You can condescend them. You can demean and dehumanize them all you want to. At the end of the day, you need their vote. And so I know it's fun to say na-na-na-na-boo-boo on the playground of politics, but you need their votes. You need their votes to win. And this makes me think you don't really want to win. When you do things like this, you need DeSantis supporters' votes. And when you make fun of him, you're making fun of them. DeSantis was very careful about that in his campaign, to not make fun of Donald Trump, because he didn't want to condescend Donald Trump supporters and his voters. That was politically wise. This is not politically wise. And so when people say, hey, Donald Trump needs some self-control, this is what they're talking about. I don't care what the media says about the bloodbath comments and all that. That is ridiculous. This is the stuff that I'm actually worried about. This, and there are other things too. But this is the stuff that I'm worried about, because you are saying to DeSantis supporters, those who supported him in the primary, that I don't care about you and I think that you're stupid and you are dumb to support this little loser. And no one likes to hear that. No one likes to hear that. Okay. So this is going to be a problem. I probably wouldn't even make fun of Nikki Haley. I wouldn't make fun of any of the people that you primaried against. I mean, they did when DeSantis came out and supported Donald Trump after he dropped out of the primary. There was some, you know, reconciliation there a little bit. Trump was still kind of a sore winner. But okay, move on. But he hasn't moved on. Really? Really? This is the kind of egotistical behavior that actually will be an obstacle to him winning in November. And that really sucks. It's really going to suck if Joe Biden wins because of that. It's not worth it, man. It's not worth it. And by the way, like, I think that DeSantis is more conservative than Trump. I mean, I think that he is actually doing better things than Trump did. So you definitely don't have a reason to slam him. That's what it is. I'm having deja vu, y'all. Deja vu of 2020. Can't believe we're already back here. All right, we got another thing to talk about. I know I just did an ad, but I have quite a few ads today. So let me get through. This other one, and that is pre-born. Did you know that a baby's heart begins to beat at just 3 weeks? At 5 weeks, a baby's heartbeat can be heard on an ultrasound, and that is where Preborn steps in. They are a network of clinics. They provide all kinds of resources to pregnant moms in need, including free sonograms. And when a mom sees that baby on the ultrasound, they hear that beating heart, she is so much more likely to choose life for her baby. And so by donating to Preborn, donating, say, $28 to cover the cost of an ultrasound, you are literally saving lives. And so this is well worth your money if you're looking for a place to give that can really make an impact on multiple generations at once. Then you should donate to Preborn, whatever you can give. Go to preborn.com/Allie. You can also give a leadership gift to save babies in a big way. Your tax deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. Just go to preborn.com/Allie to do that. Preborn.com/Allie. Okay, so I've been seeing this clip going around. This doesn't have anything to do with what we were talking about. Actually, every time I say that, I can always find a connection. The connection is stupid things said. The connection is self-centeredness, just a little bit, just in that last example that we were just talking about. And this is, I think, so emblematic of where we are, not just as a culture, but I think in large part as a church. We've got what I called in my book and what I refer to as meology. Rather than theology, the study of God, we are pushing meology, which is the study and knowledge of ourselves. Self-discovery, we're told, is the path to happiness and satisfaction and fulfillment. And unfortunately, that has bled into our Bible studies and our understanding of Scripture, our understanding of Christianity. It has bled into the pulpit, especially when it comes to women. Women's Bible studies, women's messages, women's books. That's why I wrote the book, You're Not Enough, and That's Okay, because I have been hearing from so many Christian women in particular, as well as secular women, you're enough, you're enough, you're enough, you're perfect the way you are. Like, we are convinced as women that the biggest problem that we face is our insecurity about ourselves or our negative body image. That's not the biggest issue that we face. The biggest issue that we face is that we are sinners in need of a Savior. The biggest issue that we face is that we are dead in our sin apart from Christ. The biggest issue that we face is that our sin gets in the way of glorifying God. The solution to all those things, of course, is God's grace and our ability to be made alive in Christ by grace through faith. But it's certainly not ourselves that can save us. It's not ourselves that gives us happiness. We are not going to find wholeness by just loving ourselves more, contrary to what popular culture says and popular Bible teachers even say. But there was a preacher at Common Good Church, Washington. That's already cursed. I just hate the name of that church so much. Jermell Witherspoon. He gave a sermon, I guess you could call it, last year, but it is just now circulating thanks to woke preacher clips. And the question that he asks in this sermon is, what if God worships me? What if he does? Sot 5.
What if God worships me? Can you say that with me? What if God worships me? Now, I get it. We've started to worship a very big heteronormative white Jesus that we constantly thank for standing between us and a mean God. But really, really, who, what, when, and why? Worship has become so God-centered that it risks the subjective colliding of our own things, our biases.
We declare that you are God that worships us. That's how much you love us.
Not seen that full thing. Oh my gosh. If I had pearls on, I would be clutching them so hard. Oh my goodness. I was like, I don't even know if I want to play this blasphemy. Oh my goodness. That is where everything has always gone wrong. The worship of ourselves. Go all the way back to the garden. That is basically how Satan tempts Adam and Eve. Did God really say, don't you know better than God? Don't you want to be like God? Don't you want to have the same wisdom, the same power, the same discernment and authority that God has? Just eat the fruit. What does he know? Oh no, God doesn't want what's best for you. He just doesn't want you to be like him. He doesn't want you to be as powerful as him, as knowledgeable as him. And so Eve ate. And the rest is a bloody, murderous, sinful history. So bad that God sent his only son to die a gruesome, undeserved death on a cross, on our behalf. What if God worships us? God doesn't worship us. Nowhere in Scripture do we see that he worships us. In fact, we see that we are really, really small. We are really, really good at messing things up. We are really finite. We are really fallible. We are really deceitful. We are really, really capable of wickedness and evil and violence. We are really, really needy of a savior, of a guide. And in fact, throughout Scripture, we see that it's humans that long for something to worship. We long for someone to follow. We do not see that need from God. Let me just read you what Scripture says about God. Here's Acts 17, starting in verse 24. The God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man, nor is he served by human hands, as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place. God is in control. God is in charge. He does not need anything. The creation that he made with his voice through his power was for his own glory and for his own good pleasure. And he created man in his image to need God and to worship God. Colossians 1, starting in verse 15. Here's the description of Jesus. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. And you, here's what we are. Not things to be worshipped, but you who once were alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds. This was all of us before Christ. He has now reconciled in his body of flesh by his death in order to present you holy and blameless and above reproach before him. If indeed you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you have heard, which has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven and of which I Paul became a minister. Apart from Christ, we are dead in our sin. We are enemies of God. Yes, we are made in the image of God, but we are bound for hell. We are stuck in our depravity, and we are not ever things to be worshiped. We are, because of God's grace, the objects of his love. So mercifully and miraculously and wonderfully, John 3:16 lays that out beautifully for us, but we are never objects of worship. John 4:24 says, God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. Worshiping God is so important that God gives so many specifications in his law giving to Israel for how they must worship him, how they must study him, how they must obey him and come to know him. The Psalms are filled with worship of the Lord. All the earth worships you, Lord, and sings praises to you. They sing praises to your name. Psalm 66:4, Psalm 86:9. All the nations you have made shall come and worship before you, O Lord, and shall glorify your name. Worship the Lord in the splendor of holiness. Tremble before him, all the earth. Psalm 96:9 goes over and over and over again. We are to worship God, never the other way around. You know who really, really wanted to be worshiped? Satan. What happened to that guy? What happened to Lucifer when he was jealous of God, when he wanted the power and the glory and the light to be all his? How'd that work out for him? He has some power now as the prince of the power of the air, as Ephesians 2 tells us, but it's not going to end well for him, nor will it end well for any worshiper of the God of self. So just be aware of that. You can worship yourself here on earth, but your end is hell. What good is it to win the whole world, to gain the world, but to lose your soul? It's no good at all. It's no good at all. My goodness, the just absolute blasphemy coming from the pulpit these days. May God have mercy on us. We desperately need a revival and an awakening. My goodness. All right. Let's close this out. Let me tell you about our last sponsor for the day, and that is NetSuite by Oracle. This is specifically for the business owner. So if you are a business owner, you need to know these three numbers: 37,000, 25,001. 37,000, that's the number of businesses that have upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system. It streamlines things like accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, and more, all those things that obviously you got to manage if you are a business owner. 25, NetSuite turns 25 this year. That's 25 of helping businesses do more with less, close their books in days, not weeks, and drive down costs. And one, because your business is one of a kind. You have your unique KPIs, your key performance indicators, and NetSuite by Oracle can help you meet those. It can give you one source of truth, make sure that everything is efficient so you can be at your most effective. Right now, you can download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist designed to give you consistently excellent performance absolutely free at netsuite.com/Allie. That's netsuite.com/Allie. All right, we've got lots of good episodes coming down the pipeline. Like I said, next Tuesday, I think that's probably when we're going to be analyzing Nickelodeon. You never know, something could happen over the next few days that we have to talk about on Tuesday. Monday, I think it's going to be Mike Rowe. You would think that I would know that, but you know, you just don't know. We're planning things behind the scenes, trying to decide what's best. But I think that's going to be my conversation with Mike Rowe, which was super, super encouraging. So we've got a lot of good stuff. As always, if you've got any feedback for us, if you've got any suggestions, please feel free to send them my way. I always say that you guys are my ultimate executive producers. What you guys want me to talk about, if there's enough of you that want to talk about something, we talk about it and we do our homework and make sure that we try to bring you the best analysis possible. So thank you for being an awesome, relatable family. You're the best. You really are. I've got the best audience out there. One last thing I do want to tell you about, and that is something for my fellow Blaze TV host, the awesome Jason Whitlock. Okay, so last year he had this amazing event, and it was called the Fearless Army Roll Call, and it was men's event, and men got to come hear speakers, be encouraged, and then also find community with each other. And it was such a success because men are desperate for this kind of camaraderie. They want this community, they want this encouragement, and they will get it at Fearless Roll Call event. It is in Nashville. It's on June 1st. This is going to be amazing. Jason has partnered with country music star John Rich for Roll Call 2.0 June 1st in Nashville. It's sponsored by a lot of amazing sponsors. Preborn, for example. There's going to be great music, food, fellowship. Be transformed by biblically inspired messages. You're going to love this. Go to fearlessarmyrollcall.com to reserve your spot. All right. That's all we've got for you today, Relatable family. We will be back here on Monday.